Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. This podcast is a condensed version of today's episode of Undisputed, handpicked with the best segments and discussions. Skip, Shannon, let's go.
Saturday on FS1, AL West rivals square off as Matt Chapman leads the A's against Jose Altuve and the Astros. Coverage begins Saturday, 3 Eastern on FS1 on the Fox Sports app. Well, the undefeated Gonzaga Bulldogs had their first true test of the tournament on Saturday night against the Cinderella UCLA. After forcing overtime, the Bruins tied it up with just over 3 seconds to go thanks to a putback from Johnny Juzang. And there was just enough time for Jalen Suggs to get the ball past half court and bank home the game-winning shot at the buzzer. It was incredible to see. We're now joined by Fox College basketball analyst and former UCLA head coach Steve Levin. Coach, great to have you. I got to start with you here. What percent was that Suggs shot luck? And what percent was skill?
Well, naturally, because it was from nearly half court, the percentages are not as great. But his mechanics are solid in terms of being on balance, in terms of holding his follow through. The rotation on the ball was excellent, coming off the middle three fingers, the pronation in the wrist, and he banked it straight on. So, yes, it was a difficult shot, but similar to a field goal kicker that's farther out. The percentages aren't as great, but the mechanics were there. Or in hockey or soccer, a shot on goal. What makes it remarkable is the distance, and obviously to win the game makes it even more dramatic and memorable.
But wait a second, Coach. Did he try to bank the shot? Was that the goal of the shot, was to hit the backboard first?
Yeah, in that situation, as you know, under duress, the seconds ticking down, what was at stake? Your goal is to get to a place, being aware of the time, and get that shot off. And what impressed me, it wasn't as though it was some crazy heave. I mean, he had his legs under him. It speaks to his strength. And the mechanics carried the day, a basketball, a game of habits. It led to this compelling game-winning shot. The mechanics and the fundamentals were there. Now, of course, the distance makes it, you know, spectacular and less likely to happen. But that's what makes it memorable.
Coach, as being a former coach, how many times did you put your guys through? The clock's winding down, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and you put them on different spots of the court. Obviously, layups, they can make a layup, but at some point in time during the course of practice, you're counting down to win a game, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. How many times would you say you've done that in your coaching career?
Yeah, you do it as a child, obviously growing up on the playground, and you do set up situations in practice, so you're more familiar. Matter of fact, when I was an assistant in 95, won the national championship, twice a week at the minimum, we worked on length of the court, ball handling, being able to beat the clock under 5 seconds, and then led to Tyus Edney against Missouri up in Boise, Idaho, making that mad dash to continue our run to eventually a national championship. Jim Herrick was the head coach at that time, but we had practiced that situation and knew Tyus was capable of doing it because of his handles, his speed, and, of course, there are reads. You've got to be able to read the defense. In certain situations, you kick it if you're double-teamed. But Tyus, in that case, took it the length of the court. So you do work on time and score late-game situations as a coach. So there's a familiarity and a comfort level when you get in that situation in the game. But let's not kid ourselves. That was just a spectacular, supernatural play by Jalen Suggs. Will be the 1, 2, or 3 pick in the upcoming draft. And you got to have that, like a Joe Montana rolling out of the pocket, finding Dwight Clark in that NFC championship against Dallas. Skip knows a thing or two about that.
I do, but I also know a thing or two about lucky shots. And for me, this was 95% luck. I give you mechanics. I give you the skill involved, but a lot of the kids could go in full speed, get the ball to the backboard from that spot. He did have a defender who got David Singleton, who sort of crossed his path and bothered him a little bit. So I'm going to give him some credit. in the skill level of being able to shoot the shot and get it away cleanly to at least get it up to the backboard. But that shot, because it's shot from an angle, had to be about a foot wide right, and it had to be about a foot long to bang off the backboard and go through the hoop like that. So to me, even Mark Few said after the game, that was a lucky shot. Later, Mark Few said, I was happy Jalen was about to shoot it, because to your point, Steve, he's got March magic to him. He is their it kid for that team. So I get that. You can maybe say he willed it in off the backboard. I just don't think he aimed the shot at the backboard to begin with.
Yeah, you know, it makes us think back to Christian Laettner against Kentucky. You know, the timing of having to get the catch and then turn and have the proper mechanics in terms of the footwork, the feet facing the basket, therefore your shoulders, and you end up taking an on-balance shot. Now, Laettner wasn't as far away from the basket as Suggs. That's what makes Suggs' shot more remarkable and more memorable. And there's no doubt, when you look at national championships runs, the runs through the history of the NCAA, the national championship run usually includes a buzzer-beating shot, whether it was Chris Jenkins for Villanova, Tyus Edney for UCLA, Laettner for Duke. And here we have one with Suggs as the championship lines up for Gonzaga. Now, Baylor has something to say about that tonight.
Okay, so, Coach, speaking of Baylor, Shannon's got Gonzaga. He bet me he took Gonzaga versus the field. I'm very impressed. My field has dwindled to one team. I guess it's the team to have if you got the field in Baylor. But what shot do you give Baylor to pull off the upset tonight?
I think they have an excellent shot. I do lean slightly towards Gonzaga. It just seems to be their season. They've been the one consistent element in college basketball this year. And with the COVID conditions, pretty remarkable from start to finish that Gonzaga has played at this high level. But Baylor has excellent guards. And you look at Butler and Mitchell, as good as it gets. And the quickness of this Baylor team can cause some problems for Gonzaga. They get on the boards well. It's a team that learned from their setbacks. They had a couple losses, but I think that's helped them. And they're playing at a high level. My only concern, if you're a Gonzaga fan, is did the Zags use too much emotional and physical fuel in that knockdown, dragout game against UCLA? And also, does the undefeated factor play a part in terms of maybe the weight of the world being on Gonzaga's back? To this point, to Mark Few's credit, and the makeup, the nature, the personality of this Zag team is such that they haven't played with any uptightness. They've been loose, aggressive, and Jalen Suggs, the freshman, just leading this team. And we've seen great players, great point guards do this before. You go back to Jason Kidd, or didn't win it, but made a great run with Cal, or Magic Johnson at Michigan State. Mike Bibby was an underclassman at Arizona in 97 when they cut down the nets. And Jalen Suggs is in that kind of rare air, just a special talent. And that's really what I think separates this Gonzaga team from any prior Gonzaga teams. There have been some great ones, but Jalen Suggs is that good.
So, Coach, if in fact Gonzaga will slightly prevail here, how high will the score get? Could we see a team go over 100?
It's possible, but I think this game's going to be in the 80s or 90s. I was impressed that the score was as high as it was in the UCLA-Gonzaga game, because UCLA controls the tempo well. They're 337th in college basketball at playing in a more deliberate pace, and yet they were able to get up and down the floor against UCLA and put up big numbers. So I expect this to be a high-scoring game, and if you look at the numbers, Baylor, you know, doesn't score at the level that Gonzaga does. Gonzaga's 89 points per game on the year, and Baylor 78. So I think it'll be somewhere right in between, playing the 80s, but it could get to the 90s, depending on how hot the shooting is from behind the arc tonight.
But I think when you look at the game, Coach, is that both teams, UCLA and Gonzaga, shot over 57%. And normally, teams award 97 win percentage is 97% when a team shoots 57% from the floor and get to the line. So UCLA played as well as they could possibly play, and it still wasn't good enough. So how much above do you think Baylor have to play above their heads in order to beat Gonzaga?
yeah, it's a fine line. They're going to have to play at a magic level to beat Gonzaga. And yet you can't approach it that way. You know, okay, you have to approach it like you do every game, even though we know it's the biggest game of the year.
Right.
I think the key in preparation, as you know, as an athlete, as a coach, is that drum roll and doing what you do best. And they've done well enough to get to this championship game. There's no reason to depart from their style, their system of play. And they are a really good team. It won't be a shocker by any means if Baylor ends up winning tonight, in particular because of the fuel tank. I'm curious to see where Gonzaga's, you know, energy level is emotionally and physically. Will they be as fresh and on point to get this win tonight? Or will Baylor have an edge in that regard because they're coming off a game where they won comfortably and didn't have to expend the degree of energy emotionally or physically that that Gonzaga did?
So how does Baylor deal with Drew Timme, because nobody else has been able to?
You know, I think with Timme, one of the keys is before he gets the ball playing defense, use your quickness, your length, and meet him early. Easier said than done in terms of shutting him down. He's going to get his points, but I think you want to make him have to step out a little bit farther from his comfort zone, the operational area he's accustomed to catching the ball, and just try and limit his touches. Easier said than done, but Baylor has that type of quickness. Also, the pressure on the ball, very important, just like getting the quarterback in football. Baylor can pressure Gonzaga, not allow them to have free looks or the window shot over their defense, then that goes a long way to disrupting the timing and the rhythm of the Gonzaga offense. But again, back to guards, you know, Kispert, Ayayi, and Suggs, those three are dynamic. I think really that's what we're going to see tonight are the two best backcourts in the country, because Baylor's backcourt as well is lights out. I mean, Butler and Mitchell are a dynamic duo.
And finally, Coach, Davion Mitchell for Baylor is, to me, the best perimeter defender in the country. And I assume he's going to be on Suggs much of the night. Who wins that battle?
Well, interestingly, you know, don't be surprised if, you know, Mark Few elects to mix his defenses some. And they do some switching as well to give opponents different looks. And you don't necessarily have to put Suggs on the opposing team's best player, particularly in the first half. You may want to save some of that as a different look in the second half, because you want to keep Suggs out of foul trouble and on the floor. Because if he goes out, then suddenly this Gonzaga's team's chances of winning are greatly diminished. I think it is a great matchup, and Baylor's defense is underrated. They can disrupt, unnerve, discombobulate opponents with their length, foot speed, and quickness. And it'll be the quickest team that Gonzaga has faced this season, without a doubt. And it's tough to simulate speed and quickness in practice. You can watch it on game film, but like everyone that has a plan until they get punched in the face, I think it was Mike Tyson said that quote. And Baylor really does have electrifying athleticism and speed. But if Gonzaga can neutralize, offset that, still execute and play in a comfortable fashion in terms of choosing when to run, execute on the half court, then I think the Zags have a narrow edge.
I believe for the first time in 45 years since that 1976 Indiana team, we're going to have an undefeated national champion.
Wow.
Kent Benson, Quinn Cook, Mike Woodson, Skip, you remember them.
Do I?
Yeah, and what a great story. You know, here they are in Indianapolis, and only an hour away from Indiana, the Hoosiers campus, where they played their games and went undefeated under Bobby Knight that season.
Nobody would have expected this team. There have been a lot of teams, the UNLV, the Kentucky teams, that come with undefeated. Nobody would have thought it would be this team.
Don't forget Coach Wooden's four undefeated teams back
then. Yeah, we talked about this 76.
This tournament has been so, so special. I cannot wait to see how it plays out tonight. Coach, it was great to have you join us. Thank you so much for your insight. Enjoy this one tonight, and I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to say about it tomorrow.
No mercy.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
So over the weekend, the NBA fined Kevin Durant $50,000 for, quote, offensive and derogatory language on social media while direct messaging actor and comedian Michael Rapaport. KD apologized, telling reporters, quote, I'm sorry that people seen that language I use. That's not really what I want people to see and hear from me, but hopefully I can move past it and get back out there on the floor. Well, Michael Rapaport is joining us now. And, Mike, we appreciate you coming on. We do want to hear your side of the story. So how do you feel now that you've had time to really think about everything?
Oh, it's been crazy. It's been tough. You know, the last few days have been tough. Have been crazy. I've gone out of the house and I get, you know, sneers and I get finger pointing and I don't do good with sneers and snickers. And then I actually went to the dog park with my dog, and people that usually, you know, say hello and even play with my dog, they don't want to play with my dog Wheezy. And then, you know, I went to my coffee shop and they said, not today, Cupcake. And it's weird. It's like, why are you calling me Cupcake? And then I get online and social media, and, you know I put it out there, but, you know, people online have been so cruel and mean. And I have to say about the people on social media that I don't know, I could give a crap about the people on social media. In all honesty, guys, the whole thing has been crazy. I never expected it to turn into what it turned into. You know, it's something that I take as a learning experience. It's something that, to be honest, I regret. I don't know Kevin Durant as a friend. I don't consider him a friend. We actually met on social media. He reached out to me because he wanted to do something that I call the shame game, when people come into my DMs and they say mean things, when they say racially insensitive things, when they threaten me, when they threaten my wife, literally, because I'm sure you guys get them. I get them every day. You know, I'm going to do this to you. I'm going to do that to you. And Durant reached out to me because he wanted to do that. We actually did that. I met him. We were talking about doing business together. We didn't do business together. That was no problem. But that's the extent of my relationship with him. In regards to the DMs, you know, this whole thing started with the opening night when he made his return, and the Shaquille, Charles Barkley, Kenny Smith interview where he shunned them. And I believe you guys talked about it on the show. Mm-hmm. I said something where I didn't even add him about the interview, saying, if you don't want to do the interview, don't do the interview. I didn't add him. The next morning, after the game, it might have been after the game, you know, he went into my DMs and he said, you know, we were going back and forth about that, and that was fine. You know, I could banter, I could trash talk, I could say whatever, you know, I'm good with that. I'm comfortable with that. I've made a good career in the sports world from that, a great career in the podcast world because of that. But when you say you're going to spit on me and you can't wait to spit on me, and let's meet up on this street and that street because you're going to spit in my face. And that was the first time. And then there was a second time when I see you, I'm going to spit in your face. And then last Tuesday in the morning, while I was at work on Atypical, I was dealing with a lot. I'm moving. There's a lawsuit situation that I'm dealing with. And he hit me out of the blue. I can't wait to see your dirty butt. When I see you, I'm going to spit in your face. And I'm like, and then he kept going on, and then he brought up my wife. And at that moment, it wasn't Durant. At that moment, it wasn't a basketball player. It was just another dude in my DMs. And I was like, yo, this ain't cool. We're not friends. There's no bro code. I don't know you like that. That's not banter. That's not funny. That's not like me, you know, saying, yo, look at Shannon's suit today that he's wearing on the show. You know, why are you wearing those colors? They don't match. Or Skip, you're crazy. That shot wasn't as big, the greatest shot ever. That's none of that stuff. That's not, you're sensitive. That's nothing. And I put it out there. Did I think it would turn into this whole thing? Absolutely not. Do I wish I had never done it? 100%, because it turned into a whole situation that I didn't imagine. I didn't imagine that it would grow tentacles into a race issue, which is shocking to me. I didn't realize that it would grow tentacles to turn into a possible homophobic issue. But it happened. There's obviously, his ramifications have been public. In all transparency, full transparency, I've had to deal with ramifications, with my world and my business. And I got to take that on the chin. And, going forward, I just have to be sharper. I have to be smarter. I have to be more mature about how I, handle myself on social media. So that's how that's the gist of it. And at the end of the day, I regret that the whole thing happened. And aside from all the banter, the person that was the most pissed off about me, probably the most pissed off because of the attention and the sort of negative attention, is my wife. And she's probably, forget the doghouse. I'm in the house with the alligators with her. She doesn't like the attention and the negative attention. And that's where we are. So that being said, I got to take all that on the chin and, hopefully I can move forward and, be better in regards to how I deal and, speak on social media.
So, Michael, you're saying that all the negative backlash you've received, even from your wife, is because you went public with the DMs. So you regret going public with the DMs.
No, I don't regret going public with the DMs. My wife, that's just like, she doesn't like attention. Mm. She don't care about the DMs. And like I said, I've put people on blast with DMs all the time. I do it all the time, literally all the time. That's why Durant reached out to me. We did a skit that's on his YouTube network where he put out a tweet and, we read his messages online called The Shame Game. I put out people's DMs. If you say anti-Semitic things to me, if you say you're an N-word lover, if you say, when I see you, I'm going to do this to you. I put people's DMs all the time. At that moment, Durant was just a person in my DMs threatening me. It was the third time. And like I said, it was just a spur of the moment thing. When I've made rants standing up for the little guy, when I made rants that go super viral in regards to the Charlottesville situation. Obviously we don't talk politics on this show, but I've made rants that went super viral regarding politics. I made a rant that the only time I ever got suspended on Twitter was when that Fox News lady, she said to shut up and dribble. And I did a very volatile rant in defense of NBA athletes, actually LeBron, and I believe Durant was part of what inspired her thing. Not that that matters, but that's just my persona on social media. It's not who I am in real life. It's a larger than life sort of exaggerated persona, just like how you guys are on this show. In real life, Skip's not screaming and yelling about sports, nor is Shannon. That's my online persona. I let my online persona get the better of me. But in regards to why I did it, I didn't like being threatened. And I don't, okay. Unless you're saying your wife is gorgeous, unless you're saying your wife is beautiful, don't speak on my wife. We're not friends.
Okay, so Michael, why then do you think you got shunned by people you know at the dog park and at your coffee shop?
That was a joke. In regards to the dog park and the coffee shop, I was just playing with you guys.
Okay.
I think, for some reason, people, this took on a life of its own. And like I said, if I had known it would take on this life of its own, I wouldn't have done it. People, it became fodder. Somehow it went from Tuesday to, we're almost a week. Usually you know these things on social media, the news cycle is so quick, they usually die down. This thing ignited something. I'm not exactly sure why, but I get it. I understand it. And as far as the dog park and the coffee shop and, some people that I know that I consider personal friends have commented in a way that I thought they should have reached out to me. That's cool. And as far as people I don't know, burner accounts and Russian accounts and bots, I could care less. I've gotten phone calls and FaceTimes from players that played in the league. I've gotten some texts from players that are in the league now. And, people have varying opinions on the whole thing. I know my part in it. I take responsibility. And, you know, that's all I could, you know, I don't know what more I could say about it.
Mike, that was my biggest problem, was that you released the DMs. You have to understand, if that's anyone else, if that's Joe Blow, they don't know who Joe Blow is. That's Kevin Durant. In many regards, he's the first or second or third best player in the NBA. You had to know. If I release DMs from a girlfriend, they don't care. But if my girlfriend is a celebrity, the shade room, everybody's going to pick that up. Mike, that's just not anybody. That's just not the normal troll that's in your DMs. And second of all, how did you allow this to get to this? The moment it started going sideways, there's no more banter. Now it's time to cease and let it go. I'm going to unfollow him, block him, and keep it moving. Why did you allow it to get to this?
Well, in regards to what you said, Shannon, you said this when you first talked about it. You're 150% right. It shouldn't have got to that point. It should have been blocked and deceased. It should have moved forward. He's Kevin Durant. I'm Michael Rappaport. You know who I am. So, I didn't like it. I don't look at myself as a, this is the reality. You know, I don't look at, I should look at myself as that, because I am Michael Rappaport. You know who I am. I have been, you know, in the public eye for 30 years. Like I said, I underestimated the power of social media. I underestimated the power of my social media. I didn't appreciate the spitting. I didn't appreciate the threats. And like I said, unless you're saying your wife is beautiful, God bless her, God bless you, you're a lucky man. We're not boys. Like, I don't banter by saying, hey, Skip, when I see you, I'm going to spit on you. And Skip goes, ah, that's funny. I'm going to spit back. And I go, ha, ha, that's not banter. That's not trash talking. That's threatening. So, like I said, it got out of way bigger than I thought.
Why did you just reach out to KD and say, KD, bro, I think you're going to, I say, that's a little bit too far, KD.
I don't have his number.
No, Shannon. I'm just saying, you should have, in the DM, instead of going back, like, this threat, like, hey, KD, I think this took a turn somewhere. It's going to a place that I don't really think it should go, nor do I want it to go. So let's just, you know, hey, let's rein it back in and like, look, you know what, bro? To keep from it before it goes any further, I think what we should do is just, like, cease this conversation, and you and I have no further communication.
You're 100% right. I should have done that. And after the whole thing turned into where we are today, I wish I had done that. And, you know, I'm an emotional person. I think that what is my biggest strength as an actor. I think that's what my biggest strength is as a personality. I think when I come on the show emotionally and defend Charles Oakley, I think when I come on the show and I emotionally talk about Damian Lillard being great, ring or without a ring, that's part of who I am. I need to be more improved with that. I need to be in more control of my emotions. And, you know, it wasn't a good decision. It was a bad decision. And I regret that we got this far. And I regret that I did it. And I wish I had handled it like that. Because when you said that, when you guys were breaking it down last Wednesday, I was like, he's right. And my good friends, you know, my friends in New York, my friends in Brooklyn, my best friend, he said, Shannon's right when he, you know, about the clip. And what you guys said was right. So, you know, I'm a big boy and I could take it on the chin, and the looks and the sneers and not petting my dog, you know, I could deal with that. And the bots, I could deal with that also.
So, Michael, Shannon said earlier in the show, when he wakes up and he's just having a bad day, he tries to just stay to himself. Don't go out. Don't inflict your bad day potentially on somebody else. I know I've always had what I call the 24-hour rule. If I get mad, I try to sleep it off for 24 hours. And then if I'm still mad, then I act upon it. Do you wish you'd taken 24 more hours to just cool off a little bit? Or do you think it had gone completely over the edge and it was time to act?
I wish that I had waited 5 minutes. I didn't even need 24 hours. I wish that I had waited 15 minutes. And you guys are both right. You're both right. The 24-hour rule, you know, block, move on. You're both right. And you know, like I said, you know, I usually come on the show as my, you know, sort of sports persona. I'm being genuine. It wasn't a great choice. And, you know, I'm not happy that it happened. I'm not happy that it turned into a whole thing. I'm sure he's had ramifications. He's got a great family. I'm sure they didn't like it. I'm sure he doesn't like it. And, you know, I just have to take, you know, I take responsibility for it.
How did you feel about him getting fined $50,000 for this?
You know, that's part of being an NBA player. Again, I never would have imagined he would have gotten fined $50,000 or 50 cent. I literally didn't. You know, you're talking from the pine. At this point, you got to pay the fine. I didn't like it. And I didn't, you know, like I said, it grew tentacles that I never imagined. And, you know, we got to move forward. You know, he said, you know, he made his statement. He said he's not, you know, he's sorry for what he said. He didn't say he was sorry to me. You know, and it's all good. It's not that serious. It's not that big of a deal. In regards to how it'll affect my life, and I'm so sure it won't affect his life that much further. And I bet you it'll make the Nets you know, band together even tighter than they have been.
So do you plan on reaching out to KD and like, look, bro, this went further left than I intended it to go. I'm sure it went further left than you intended it to go. Look, we're not friends, but I don't want there to be any bad blood. Let's just say, let's agree to disagree. I apologize for what I said. I didn't mean any harm by it, and just move forward.
Pretty much, yeah. Let me just say this. An abbreviated version of that was attempted to be made. And you know, I think we're, you know, him and I have an understanding in that abbreviated version of what was done.
Okay, so Michael, in the end, what did you learn about Kevin Durant through this ordeal?
Well, I learned, you know, the thing in regards to, now I'm switching back to my commentator. He's just as sensitive that we've been talking about for years.
Yep.
You know, I don't think, you know, if I was Kevin Durant, I wouldn't be talking to Michael Rappaport, Larry X, Joe Blow, Joe Schmo, or anybody on social media. And, you know, I think, you know, it was a crazy situation. But, you know, in regards to, you know, like I said, I think at the end of the day, it'll bring the Nets closer. Adversity brings them closer. Not that they need anything to inspire them because they're ridiculous. But, you know, when you grow up coddled like that, it's with actors too. You know, I'm like it too. You know, Shannon probably has a little bit of element too. When you grow up, and although Shannon came up super hard and earned every single thing from, you know, his growth. But when you're in the NFL, when you're in the NBA, when you're on a set and people get your cranberry juice and you're in the NBA, you don't even have to stretch yourself. You know, we sometimes don't mature as fast as regular people in the regular world. We get stunted. And I have to say that's happened to me because, you know, you reap the benefits of being a celebrity. You reap the benefits of those things. And, you know, we have to, like I said, I could take responsibility. I did take responsibility. I don't like my mom calling me going, what the F? And I certainly like being in the alligator house with my wife.
Mike, this is where I disagree with you on Kevin Durant. Because for me, I'll talk to people on Twitter because I never want to feel like I'm a bruh reproach. But I also ask them to watch Skip and I show every day at 9:30 Eastern AM time, 6:30 here Pacific time. I ask them to subscribe to my podcast. For me, I go places. I go to Target. I go to Whole Foods. And I'm talking to people. And when I'm done talking to the people that work there, somebody that's coming there to shop, they'll ask me, did you know that person? I was like, no. And they were like, well, you talking to them like you know them. I was like, I mean, I just the way I don't think I'm better than anybody else. Just because I'm on TV, I have a job and people know who I am, I don't place myself. So don't think that Kevin Durant shouldn't talk to you. I talk to people. I don't respond to everybody, but people will tell you, I'll talk. I carry conversation.
100%.
I try to keep it above board, but once it starts getting out of hand, I just move on in a different direction. But
You know what? And 100%, I have conversations with NBA athletes. I've had banter, trash-talking banter with NBA athletes 2 weeks ago, NFL players. But that way, but you know, why'd you, you know, whatever you're saying, your last movie was trash. Yo, I that's in my DMs right now. Nobody's ever said, I'm going to spit on you when I see you. So I get the difference of it. You know, I get the difference of bringing up people's wives. But I've had banters, I've had DMs with people to this day, in my DMs, right now. I've had it my whole career of being, you know, when I'm on this show, when I was on Skip's old show at the other place. I get it all the time. And, you know, and I'm sure Skip gets it all the time. Why'd you say this? Why'd you say that? And then people say to me, I love what you said. Thanks for giving me love on the show. Thanks for giving me love on your podcast. Thanks for giving me love or retweets. Or I appreciate that. I have it all the time. When you say you're going to spit on me, like I said, we're not cool. That ain't cool. And I have no friend that has ever said that to me. We're not boys. We're not homies. We don't have a history.
All right, Mike. Well, we hear you. We appreciate you coming on. I think it was important to hear your side of the story and hopefully a learning experience for all involved.
Your last movie went bad. Mm. Your acting in it was bad.
We appreciate you. A friend of our shows. And hopefully
you,
we'll
Michael.
Be chatting with you very soon about LeBron, you know, the Clippers, the Lakers. We'll get to it another day. Yep. But thanks for your time.
No mercy.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.